There we go. And so they got together, and there were a few hundred of them, and they published the volume, and they called the volume Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the volume Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, this is pretty much what we did. So if you want to stay sober, you might want to do the same thing. And in what I'll say layman's term, I mean, they use the word creator, spiritual fellowship, father of light, God, probably 600 times they use the word God in the book, turning yourself over to God, your life over to God, and the highest power in creation. I mean, it was obvious what the book was about, but they wrote it for alcoholics, people who had an addiction problem. Because they found most alcoholics had a little bit of an aversion to church. Because they felt that church people, I suppose, would look down on them, or they weren't good enough to go to church. So I had these meetings. They ended up calling the fellowship Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, yeah, it was clear if you read the book where everything came from. It came from the Holy Bible. And indeed, in an AA, for the first 10, 20 years, the Bible was liberally quoted from and in many AA rooms. But as AA got bigger and bigger and larger, we had different people from different religions coming in and things like that, it got more what you might call secular, more PC. Started getting like watered down a little bit. You with me? There were some people that would say that some churches have become that way. I don't know. You know, man tends to become that way. He becomes like watered down. Apparently that happened in biblical times because I think in Revelation they referred to Laodicea as being lukewarm. So apparently, that's like a spiritual malady. You become watered down. You leave your first love. But there's nothing like a crisis, right, to bring you back again. And other groups developed. Narcotics Anonymous for people who had narcotics problems, opium problems, Cocaine Anonymous, Emotions Anonymous for people who had worry problems, and Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. And there were, I think there's over 69 groups that at the end of it, they call themselves Anonymous, and they all can't use some version of the 12 steps from step 1 through step 12, and they substitute in the first step, their particular deal. So in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. In other words, we became powerless over alcohol. Or what I said to the guy, and that was my problem, not to say it was the only problem, I said to the guy, I need help. I can't stop drinking. I was powerless over alcohol. My life was a disaster. And it was a disaster because I was powerless over alcohol. And I knew it. And so if you came to me and you said, my life's a disaster and I can't stop eating, I wouldn't have understood that because I didn't have a problem with eating, at least at that time. But if you said to me, I need help, I can't stop drinking, I would say to you, I got the same problem. You know what I mean? So I could identify with you. And so these groups formed called Alcoholics Anonymous. But the interesting thing about all these groups, whether it had to do with sex or pornography or cocaine or anything, except for the very first step, all the steps were exactly the same. In other words, except for my name is Russell, I'm an alcoholic, I've admitted I'm powerless over alcohol, and in Cocaine Anonymous, it says, my name is Russell, I'm a cocaine addict, I'm powerless over cocaine, except for the first step, Sex and Love Anonymous, every other step is exactly the same. And because the underlying disease, because the drinking or the drugging or the opiates are really but a symptom of the disease. He says it's just a symptom. I'm an alcoholic because the real disease centers in our minds, not our bodies. It's a spiritual malady. It's a spiritual disease. And it says men and women, in my case, drink or drug, because they lack, because they like the effect, produced by alcohol. You know, if alcohol didn't give me the effect, if you gave me a drink and it tasted just like scotch or just like beer, but it didn't have the effect, I wouldn't drink it. Alcoholics are men and women who like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So the problem with an alcoholic like me is less so, of course, you get to the point where you're addicted and you can't control yourself and you can't stop drinking. You wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to do it again. By 5 o'clock, you're doing it again. You start drinking and drugging against your will. But the real problem with me, my problem is I drank and I drugged and I did that because I couldn't stand sobriety. That's the real problem. My problem isn't drinking. My problem is sobriety. If I felt good sober, I wouldn't be drinking. My problem is over any period of time, no matter what's going on, rich, poor, indifference, I need a drink. And that's the same thing with an addict, opiate addict. It's the same thing with almost any sort of malady. The problem is the inability to feel okay no matter what's going on. It's somehow my breathing produces toxic waste in my mind. And I have to do something. Now, so my disease is really named after the best cure. What happened with me is no woman, no suit of clothes, no amount of money, no nothing ever worked quite as good for me as just a few drinks. And so that's why I drank it. I drank it because it worked. So we named the disease after the best cure. You know, if you're a cocaine addict, it's because that was your drug of choice, because that worked better for you than any other drug. It was your anesthesia. And so what I find out is this spiritual disease, which really has to do with, in my opinion, a failure to have a relationship with the Lord. A failure to have a relationship with the Lord. We find out that this disease may take different forms. You know, for one person, he's got a drink. For one person, they've got a drug. For one person, they've got to overeat. For one person, they've got to be a rageaholic. For another person, they've got to worry all the time. For another person, they're depressed. But the disease all stems from the same thing, and that is a lack of relationship and faith in Jesus Christ. Period. End of story. You know? And so what happens is they write this book. Now of course, for many reasons, not the least of which, probably, we live in a society where nobody really believes in much anymore. And people make fun of people that believe in Jesus. And one thing is, I found most alcoholics and addicts have a lot in common. And one of the things that they have in common is, I like the term, egomaniacs with inferiority complexes. You know, they walk around saying, I don't care what you think about me. But you see, what you have to understand is, after you get some insight into yourself, you realize that people that really don't care about what other people think about them don't say, I don't care what people think about me. They say things like, you know, pass the salt, or, you know, I'll have spaghetti. Or, you know, you say something, but you don't say that. And the only people that say or think, well, I don't care what he said about me, I don't care what they think, are people that think night and day, what are other people thinking about me? And so what happens is, you know, we're sort of like delusion. We're totally self-centered. We're totally self-involved. We have low self-esteem. And that's sober. That's the way we are sober. And so unless you can somehow get that right, even if you manage to, through some sort of willpower, stay away from the drugs and the alcohol, you're just going to be one miserable son of a gun. And you're going to be lonely, you're going to be feeling sorry for yourself, you're going to be filled with self-pity, you're going to be selfish, and somewhere it's going to blow up, somewhere. So, but you see, most people, you know, when they come into Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, whatever it is, you know, they want to stop drinking, they want to stop drugging, they want to get their lives back. You know, they don't want to be suicidal. But the truth of the matter is for whatever reason, they don't really want Jesus shoved down their throat. They don't want to hear about Jesus, you know what I mean? They want the medical treatment or something like that. So what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and different programs like that is they manage to bring these people in this giant funnel. There's this giant funnel that these people fall into. It's like a giant vacuum cleaner. We suck them all in. And they all come into this giant funnel, not to find Jesus. Well, it actually is to find Jesus. They just don't know it. To find some relief. You understand what I'm saying? And they come into this giant funnel just so they can stop drinking or stop drugging or stop worrying, you know, or stop using pornography or something. They come in this giant funnel, right? But, you know, have you ever seen a funnel? You know, as they get into the funnel, you know what happens with the funnel?
It gets
narrower and narrower. And by the time you get down to the end of the funnel, you know what you find at the end of the funnel? You find Jesus. Jesus is at the end of the funnel. The narrow way. You find the narrow way. Not the broad highway. And somehow you somehow see that the answer to the real problem is a relationship with the Lord. And this may take a long time. And, you know, God knows there's a lot of distractions out there, a lot of worldly clamors. You know, the one thing about getting sober and getting right with the Lord and getting your life together and getting a new freedom and a new happiness and becoming a new creation, the one thing about it on the planet is it's like on-the-job training. Apparently, what happens, I don't know about you, but the Lord does not stop everybody on the planet and say, now, for the next 6 years, no traffic, act nicely, and as a matter of fact, don't send Sue any FPNL bills because she's trying hard to do well now. No, 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 no. What they do is you have to somehow develop this relationship with the Lord and stay away from drugs and alcohol and worry and sleepless nights and insomnia and all sorts of crazy depression and things that you got to somehow learn how to do that while the world is firing darts at you. While you're looking for a job, while you're low on money, while they're treating you badly at work, while all this stuff is happening, you got to somehow manage to do this deal. But here's the good news. The way the Lord has devised this thing is you don't have to do it alone. You can do it with other people. Now, I love church. I belong to a church, you know, and we all belong to different churches, and I love my church. But, you know, I heard a guy say it's kind of cute, and it's maybe not, maybe it's a generalization. In church, we sort of preach grace, but we practice guilt. You know, I see a lot of Christians that come into groups like this, and you know what they say? They say, why can't church be like this? Everybody's so honest. Everybody's so open. Well, you know, I've got news for you. This is church. But I understand that. It may be asking, it's tough enough to ask people in groups like this, small groups, to trust and to open up. And generally, they do open up. And the reason people open up is you're here long enough, hear other people tell their stories and testify. This kind of stuff is probably not going to happen in the near future in my sanctuary with 400 people. You know, you understand what I'm saying? First of all, the meetings would last entirely too long. We'd have 12-hour meetings. You know what I'm talking about? People are not going to... Let me tell you something. If I got up in my church, and I've done it actually before... But it's not going to be. And I started telling my story about alcoholism and addiction and what happened to me. I want to tell you something. This is the truth. Almost everybody in the pew would be nodding their head. There's not a person. There's rarely a person there that wouldn't be nodding their head. They may not see you nodding their head, and they may not admit it. But afterwards, somewhere in some dark corner somewhere, every one of those guys would come up to me because it would happen and say, listen, I got a brother. I got a sister. You know, they all would identify. Everybody knows somebody or is somebody. But in here, we get to talk about it, we get to confess about it, and because you can become transparent, you can open up, and you can confess, and you can talk, and you can even be rebuked. You can even be sort of scolded and told and set on the right path, and you get a sponsor and things like that, and you have an opportunity to finally develop a relationship with other people and also at the same time develop a relationship with the Lord. You know what I think the interesting thing is, and I sort of look, now I'm a born-again guy, and when I say, let me try to explain to you what I mean by that. I had a spiritual experience. I'm not saying everybody has to have a spiritual experience, but 30 years ago, I called upon the Lord, and I got down on my knees, I accepted Jesus into my life, and shortly thereafter, I had like one of these road to Damascus, you know, I don't know if it was on the third level, the 14th level, how, you know, the thing that Paul described. I had one of those experiences. And it was a big deal to me. I cannot, just like Paul couldn't, I can't even explain it to you in human words as to what I experienced, but I was touched by something. That doesn't happen to everybody. I mean, I think you're blessed if it does, but I had an experience. But all along in the last 30 years, I've had many different experiences, inspirational and spiritual experiences, and I know if you go along with this thing and open yourself up, you will have it too. And very, very shortly, even if you have a drug problem or a alcohol problem or a worry problem, because that's a horrible problem. Worry is a horrible problem. You know, after I got rid of the alcohol, I stopped drinking January 25th, 1981. Stopped. Never had another drink. But I guess for the next 15 years, I spent worrying and biting my nails. Worrying. Worry is a horrible thing. You know, and one of the promises says we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. No matter how far down the scale, we'll see where our experiences can help others. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. I remember one time arguing with a guy. I said, when am I going to lose, when am I going to lose the money thing? When am I going to get money? He says, what do you mean you're going to get money? He says, well, it says economic insecurity is going to leave me. He says, it doesn't say that. It says fear of economic insecurity will leave you. He says, you're always going to be broke. It just won't bother you, you know? And you know, it's sort of funny, but look, if you read, I don't know how many people are actually read the Bible. I know there's a lot of people in here that do. You'll be familiar that one of the things that Paul, the Apostle Paul, now you got this guy, the Apostle Paul, went on all sorts of mission trips, you know, was, whether you want to call him the 13th Apostle. He wrote, I think, 12 or 13. How many books of the Old Testament? 13 books in the New Testament. And he says, I've learned the secret. The secret. And he says, I've learned to be content in all things. I've been rich, I've been poor. I've learned to feel content inside no matter what's going on outside. And this is the guy who's writing this letter like from prison. He's being flogged, he's in prison, he says, I'm okay. And Jesus Christ, before he left the planet, one of the last things he said is he says to the apostles, he said, in this world you will have problems. He didn't say in this world everything's going to be hunky-dory, everything's going to be fine. He said, you will have problems, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. What does it mean to overcome the world? You know, I don't know, but I'd like to find out that deal. And I came in here and I met people who had overcome the world. I met people who had cancer, had people die on them and everything like that, and they were fine. They were okay. And I've met other people where every time you saw them, they were thumb-sucking crybabies and complaining about something. And couldn't stop drinking, couldn't stop drunk, and their life was like a three-ring circus. I've met those people too. And you can meet believers like that too. So this is a program that leads you to a faith that works. Initially it works because it keeps you away from the drugs and the alcohol and the worry, but when it really works, when it really kicks in, you, as they say, experience much of heaven and you're rocking into the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not even dream. It's just a wonderful, wonderful program, a wonderful way of life. I think of it as, I think of AA, and I think of Alive Again, and I think of these programs and what we do here as, I'll say it this way, practical Christianity. Practical, you know, I have a senior pastor at my church who has wonderful, wonderful preaching, has a great knowledge of the Bible, and I love listening to him, and I learn a lot of things from him. But, and I'm not putting him down, I'm just telling you, it's very intellectual. It's very intellectual. Nothing wrong with it. It's very intellectual. He'll give you the whole history behind everything, before, after, during. It's almost why you're there. You sort of understand it. You get spiritual truths out of it. But it's intellectual. And it's up to you. You'll get something out of it, and you're left to apply it. And, you know, I love Pastor Carey's preaching. I want to tell you something. He also is very knowledgeable and gives you all that. But there's a spiritual and emotional component to his preaching, a certain type of anointing that he has, and he has a better, he'd be able to tell me what the actual word, I guarantee you there's a word for it. He's an exhorter, but he'd tell you what the word is that maybe my senior pastor doesn't have. but he has something else. You know, everybody has different gifts. You know, that kind of thing. And as a matter of fact, he, Pastor Carey, has a service at 6 p.m. on Sunday nights at Christ Fellowship. And if you're not doing anything at 6 p.m., if you have service at your own church, you go to your own church. Amen. But if you really want to be blessed, you can come over where I'm going to be at 6 p.m. and see Pastor Carey down at his church. He just does a wonderful, wonderful service at that church. But so I get different things from different people. And I get different things from this kind of venue, too. But this venue has to do with how do you do this in practice. I mean, you know, Jesus is great. Hey, you know, love your neighbor is great. You know, the Ten Commandments is great. You know, Sermon on the Mount is great. But what do you do when you don't have a job and the rent's coming up and they're going to force you to move from your apartment and you don't have any husband and you don't have any children and you don't have anybody looking after you and you don't know where your next meal is going to come from? You know, what do you do with Jesus then? Where's Jesus? What are you going to do with Jesus then? I mean, who are you going to tell? You're not going to tell anybody about that because nobody cares. How are you going to explain that to anybody? Nobody wants to hear it. So what are you going to do? You're just going to sort of walk around and sit in the pew while they're talking all this flowery language and all this wonderful stuff, worrying about where you're going to be sleeping, whether you're going to be sleeping out on the street? You know, where's Jesus then? Well, Jesus is right here. That's the Jesus we're talking about. We're talking about the Jesus that's going to help you live your life to its fullest right now, no matter what you're going through. No matter what you're going through. We're going to talk an access to a Savior who's going to help you through your everyday problems right here, right now, with specifics on what to do with mentors and sponsors and suggestions. And guess what? Everybody's going to know about it. You're not going to be walking around saying things like, none of this stuff like, oh, what if they find out? Oh, nobody can know about this. You know, let me tell you something. I don't care what your problem is. If you don't tell somebody about it, it's twice as large. And then the next day, if you don't tell somebody about it, it's four times as large. And then you got another problem because you're going crazy. And the worse it gets, the more you don't want to tell anybody about it. Until the house blows up, or you know what I mean? Or you collapse from a heart attack, and then all of a sudden you're telling somebody, and they say, well, why don't you say something? You know? Right? Because of the fear. Well, that's another problem, the fear. How do you get rid of the fear? Right? What's your first name again?
Helen Rose.
Helen Rose. How do you get rid of the fear? What are you going to do about that, Helen Rose? The fear.
Talk about it with somebody you're afraid.
Right. So how's that working for you?
It's working?
Good. You know, so how are you gonna deal with this stuff? How are you gonna deal with the thinking? How are you gonna deal with the committee? How are you gonna deal with your brain? Very hard to leave that on the shelf. How are you gonna deal with that thinking? Thinking bad thoughts about yourself and other people that make you uncomfortable. How are you gonna think about that? How are you gonna deal with that deal? How are you gonna deal with the projection? You know what I mean? What's gonna happen to me next week, next year? How are you gonna deal with thinking about the past? You know, when you think about things in the past and you were ashamed of it or something like that, and you sort of project it to the future and you do all that stuff, how are you going to deal with comparing your insides with other people's outsides and sort of feel like they're all doing better than you and nobody's doing as bad as you, and you know, you feel different than anybody else? And how are you going to deal with loneliness? How are you going to deal with the loneliness thing or the emptiness thing or all that sort of? How are you going to deal with that deal? You know, I mean, you could have 300-400 people sitting in the pews in the church, and it's like they might as well be sitting on the planet Mars. You know, nobody's touching each other. Nobody's communicating with each other. You know, listen, I love Pastor Carey's service. I love our service. And, you know, one of the things we do is we get up and we shake hands and, you know, we sing hymns, and that helps us feel close together. But, you know, and we say prayers, which helps us feel close together. And we ask for prayer requests, so we learn a little bit about each other's lives. But, you know, and every time we do that, it helps us a little bit more. But, you know, maybe there's a way to even improve upon that, to become even more transparent. Because, you know, the truth is, with all that, and that's in a good church, we still don't know much about each other's lives. You know, Every once in a while, I'll say to the group something like this when we have prayer time over at Pastor Carey's place. And I have another gal there, a wonderful gal there, Moses. She'll say the same thing. Other people say, she says, I have an unspoken prayer. See, I have an unspoken prayer, you know? And sometimes what that is, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, that's something that's bothering you, that you're worried about, that you don't, for whatever reason, don't want anybody else to know about. And maybe the unspoken prayers are the prayers that you really need to speak to somebody about. You know, you ever think about that? I mean, I know the Lord. You know, the way we say, well, the Lord knows. Yeah, you know, the Lord does know. But, you know, it'd be nice to have, like, one other person on the planet know so you don't feel so lonely. So it's not, you know, just because it says, confess one to another. He wants us to bring people into his lives. So that's what this deal is all about. So I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you followed up, Sue. You know, I'm really proud of you guys for being here and on this thing. Now, I had my last drink in January 25th, 1981, so it's been a little over 30 years. And I came in here, you know, and I'm not going to take much longer, maybe another 5 minutes, 10 minutes or something like that. But I started off a pretty nice kid, upper middle class home, and Jewish kid from New York. And my whole life revolved around money, cars, and things. That was basically it. And I told Pastor Gary I was going to tell him, like, we were talking about Camaros. So I said, I'm going to tell my Camaro story. I haven't told them in a long time. When I was about 20 years old, 19, 20, 18, whatever it was, everybody knows what a Camaro is? Well, and I'm looking at you guys. A lot of you guys are, like, close to my age and stuff like that. Well, when I was about 18 years old, 17 years old, I came into a few bucks. You know, I inherited a little money. I can't remember how much it was, but it was enough to buy a car. And I had never had a new car. And it was the year they came out with the new Camaros. And I went down to Potamkin Chevrolet on Miami Beach. And right in the showroom floor was the first Camaro that had come into Miami. Right? You know, in my mind, I'd like to think it was the first Camaro. And I'll never forget, it was sleek. It was sleek. You remember the first? It was sleek, you know, with that fastback. And it was gold. I mean, I would never buy a car like this on your life. You'd put a gun to it right now. But it was gold. That was the color, gold, with a white Landau top. Do you remember Landau tops? So with a white Landau. And I had to have it. I had to have it, you know? You know what that is? Where you have to have something like that. So I went in and I said, I want that car. I'll pay for that car. And I had access to money. And, let me tell you something. I'm a guy, I've spent more money, you know, buying things I don't need to impress people I don't like than you could possibly imagine with money I don't even have, you know? So money gets into my pocket, it goes out right away. You know, I'm a spendaholic, too. You know, I was 9 years sober. 9 years sober, I think I was 40 years old or something like that. I'm not sure. I was a grown man when they took away my credit cards because I was so irresponsible in spending money. I'd make a lot of money, but I would spend twice as much as I made. You know, I was 9 years sober, and I'm talking about I graduated college with a postdoctorate. I graduated with departmental honors in mathematics. I was going for a doctorate in algebraic topology. I ended up going to law school. I'm not a stupid guy. And I'm telling you, it was but like 10 or 15 years later, you know, I was like 9 years sober before I realized for the first time that if you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I never quite figured that out. I could never quite balance my checkbook. You know, I never actually liked to balance my checkbook because to balance your checkbook, you have to actually look inside of it. You know? And, you know, the way I handle bills is I rip them up and I throw them because the way I figure it is if they take the credit card and it's good and I sign for it, well, I'll pay for it eventually. You know, I don't think in terms of balancing. I mean, that's for like regular people. You know what I mean? Not for special people like me. You know, I just buy and go and do it as long as I can buy it on time and somehow they'll give it for. And I saw this Camaro and I had to have it. I mean, instant gratification. You know, forget this patience stuff. And so, as a matter of fact, so I said, I want that car. And they said, no, you can't. I bought it. And they said, you can't have it now. We've got to prep it. You ever do that? They've got to prep a new car. It's, you know, you pay like $400 to prep it. So I said, no, you don't have to. I'll take it without the prep. No, we got to prep it. So he says, you come back tomorrow. And I can't remember when tomorrow was. I, you know, my mind, I think it was like a Sunday or Saturday early morning, and he says, and it'll be ready. And I was there the next day with the place, before the place opened up, because I knew, this is what I knew. I knew that once I had this car, all my problems would be over. You see, like once you have a job, the perfect job, all your problems are going to be over. You know what I mean? Once you have what I knew that this Camaro was the answer to all my problems. And they gave me that Camaro, like at 9:30, 10 o'clock. And I jumped in that car, you were that new car smell, brand new Camaro. You know, maybe it had 100 miles on it. And I drove it off the floor, and there was not another one like it in Miami. And I drove down Alton Road, like slow like, and there was nobody on the street. And I want to tell you something, this is the truth. I thought the entire world was looking at me. I thought that there were advanced civilizations in other worlds with telescopes focused on me. I thought I was driving through a stadium and there were people focused on me. I'm all right now. I felt on top of the world. I felt like I was like God in that car, and with my hand like this, and I stopped at a light. And a guy drove up right next to me in a brand new Cadillac with a blonde right next to him. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I said to myself, why can't I have a car like that? And it was over. It was over. The feeling lasted 2 blocks. The payments lasted 36 months. But you want to know something? The feeling was so incredible that it kept me always wanting to get a new car every year, every month, no matter what was going on in my life. I knew that the answer to my problem was not Jesus or character development, is if I could just get a new car. And I would hock my life and spend every amount of money I have. I wouldn't pay child support. I wouldn't have food in the refrigerator just so I could buy that new car so I could get that feeling I'm okay now. The world is looking at me for 2 blocks. And I did that over and over and over again. And you think that's funny, you know, with a car. But you know something? You know, women do it with blouses.
Come on.
With blouses.
Not all women. I'd rather cut the grass and go.
Let me explain something to you, Sue. I wasn't talking about you.
Okay.
I looked at you right away, and I knew that you didn't fall into that trap. You're too smart for that. With you, it's just opiates and stuff. But I mean, you know, I knew that you wouldn't go for the blouse thing. You know, it was something else. I knew that you were above that stuff, you know. But or maybe dyeing your hair or something. It's always something external. Or how about losing weight? If I only lost 10 pounds. All sorts of vanity stuff. What does it say in Ecclesiastes? Vanity, vanity, it's all vanity. You know, after I got sober, after I destroyed my life, I destroyed people around me, I destroyed everything that was going on, I destroyed my self-respect, and I finally come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stopped drinking, and one of the first things I say to my sponsor, I said, I've got to lose 15 pounds, I've got to stop biting my nails. It was all vanity stuff. Getting myself looking better. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being healthy and looking better, but the last thing I would think about is integrity. The last thing I would think about is sacrifice or integrity or faith. I'm thinking about like 10 or 15 pounds, a better job, a newer suit. I'm already hair triggered on the broad highway, on the wrong road. And it's clear to me, and I had to link up with people to get me defocused from the woman, from the car, from the money, from all that stuff that I knew would fix me, and focused on another path that isn't so bright and shiny, you know what I mean? A different type of path. And so that's what we do in here. That's what the deal is in here. And so I've been working this thing now for, you know, a number of years, you know, 30 years, and I go around different places and I talk about it, and you know, I'm just so happy you guys are here. You know, I just hope you hang in there. You know, I mean, I will tell you this, and I don't tell you this to discourage you. I'll tell you a couple things. Number one, I absolutely know that if you hang in with this thing, Your life will change miraculously. I don't know where you are as believers, or whether you're believers or not, or whether you're just sort of cultural Christians. You know, we got a lot of cultural Christians, you know, but you know, I mean, if you hang in with this thing and you go to these groups and you go to different meetings, your life will change unbelievably, like miraculously. You know, the way I love the way they put it in the book. He says, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which are the driving force of these men and women's lives, are incredibly shifted over to one side, and they become directed and dominated by a whole different set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. And that will definitely happen to you. You know, and we were talking at dinner, and I think it was Steve, was telling Pastor Carey, you were saying some very nice things about me, and I appreciate it. I can appreciate that now. You know, it used to be a time where I could never accept a compliment. You know, somebody would give me a compliment, and they'd say, you know, that you're very nice. And I'd say, oh, no, it was nothing. Oh, no, it was nothing, everything. And, you know, I didn't have whatever it takes to be able to say thank you. You know what I mean? I couldn't accept a gift. Oh, I'll buy dinner. No, I'll buy dinner. I didn't realize how grandiose I was. I couldn't accept a gift. I couldn't do all that. I didn't even think that there was anything wrong with that stuff. I used to be a gossiper and everything like that. And Steve was saying some nice things about me, which I won't even, he was saying about, helping other people and, with different things. And I said, he said something like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said, he really puts himself out or something like that. He's really nice. And I said, I appreciate it, but I can't take credit for that. I said, that it really has very little to do with me. You know, that's really the Lord. It's really Jesus. It's really the Holy Spirit, you know? He says, no. He says, that's you. I said, you know what the problem is? You needed to see me before the Lord got a hold of me. Then you know who I really was. You know, you're seeing me after the fact. You know, I know who I am. I know what kind of person. I know how selfish and self-centered and greedy I can be. You know, and I know what's going on with me now. And I know the only difference is the Lord. That's it. The only difference is faith. There is no other difference but faith. You know, and that's the bottom line. But this is something that will give you a faith that works. You know, I really enjoy it. I love seeing you guys. I hope you guys stick around. There's other meetings here. I think Alive Again meetings. I'm not sure what the other meetings are. I know over at Old Cutler, there's an Alive Again meeting on Friday nights. We have a meeting also on Saturday mornings. We have meetings on Sunday mornings.
There's a meeting
here on Sunday morning, 9:30. I mean, I'm sure I'm leaving out meetings. I know there's a Bible study. There's meetings all over the place. You know, if you need to, you know, go to meetings and you can get sponsors and things like that. You really want to take advantage of this deal. And Sunday night, you know, if you're not doing anything, you go over to Pastor Carey's service. It's just an incredible service. How many people have been over to that service? Pastor Carey's service. That's an incredible service. Oh, you've been there to that service? That's great. So how'd you find out about this? Oh, really? So you go to CF Recovery.
Right.
And they have some great meetings over there with Louis Carrillo and everything like that. Yeah, well, that's wonderful, too. And we help people that not only are alcoholics and addicts and, you know, all sorts of stuff, but people that come, you know, a lot of people, like I came from an alcoholic home. My mother was an alcoholic. We help people with codependency and stuff like that who have sons and brothers and sisters and mothers who are alcoholic and that kind of stuff. And so we help you with that, so... I'm real glad you guys are here, and you know, I'm going to close up now, and God bless you, and have a nice night. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Okay, we have no dues or fees. How's that?